In addition to that, we're opening the show up with a. I got it. Well, this is a person I really enjoy talking with. Every time she writes a play, she knows that she's going to be here talking about it, and she's going to keep me awake for like days after I see her play because I just keep. What the hell? Wait a minute. Wait. No. This was it.
Well, I didn't think you would this time.
Oh, come on. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. All right. My guest today is playwright Wendy Graff and actors Rachel. Is it Seaforth?
It is Seaforth. Wow.
Okay,
good job.
Okay. Yeah, it's the back east part, you know?
Yeah.
And Hunter Garner. And Rachel and Hunter are members of the cast of Wendy's latest play, which is Please Don't Ask About Beckett. And I got to tell you, it's a really interesting play. And I really liked it. Okay. Now, Wendy, why did you think I wouldn't like it?
Well, it had no terrorists. It had no bombs. It had no...
What about me?
Domestic terrorists. Right. Familial terrorists. It had no... You know, there were no...
Yeah.
It wasn't part of my Jewish Revolutionary trilogy or my Muslim trilogy.
All right, but you know, you got to give me some credit for sort of a bigger.
No, I do. I give you all the credit,
and I'm just teasing. Teasing you, just because it was an easy way to open up the show. Okay, there you go, folks. The play is really, really interesting. I the person that went to see it with me was just he looked at me afterwards, and we just said, damn, this was really good. And everybody in the audience at that night, it was the opening night of it, and it was really, people were just stunned. And really, I liked it. You know, it was very interesting. And it's a play that I have to say, I didn't expect what I saw. And why don't you give people a sense of what the play's about?
What's the play about? Well, the play is about, there's a lot of levels. And, you know, actually... I wrote about all the things that I always write about, which is family, identity, you know, all that sort of thing. But yet this time, rather than being seen through the lens of like political or religious upheaval, it was seen through the lens of a family, which I guess is kind of a microcosm of the bigger political and religious strife of the world. So you could actually say that. But it's about a family who, it centers around kind of one member of the family and how that one member affects the rest of the family and the dynamics and the family dynamics. But at the heart of the story, it's really the story of a young woman's journey to selfhood. And in order to achieve that, she has to separate from her family and from her twin.
You know, thematically, you know, it reminded me of the first play of yours I ever saw.
Behind the Gates?
Yeah. I mean, because it was interesting because it contextually it was different, you know, overall, but it was actually that theme of actually wrestling with how do people come up out of whatever situation you're in. And a lot of it, yes, is family. And the recognition that, you know, at some point it's not always you're thrown out of the nest, but actually at some point you got to climb out and jump and say, I got to get the hell away from here, right? But this one was really very interesting because it was a much calmer play than others.
No bombs.
No bombs. But you know, it was the upheaval was much more sort of, it was internal and it had some manifestations externally, but it's also a lot of like just people wrestling with what the hell are they and where are they at and what's going on. And every member of the cast actually was really interesting. Which brings me to guess who?
You're looking at me, so I'm guessing it's me.
Yes, Rachel. Yes. What did you think about this?
That seems like a broad question.
Yes.
About the show in general, about the character.
Just about what Wendy was saying about what the, you know, what the play is actually. What's the heart of it?
Yeah, I do. I mean, obviously, I'm looking at it from my character's perspective, so I definitely do think it's my character's story. Towards self-realization and towards, I feel like it's a story of love and growing up and trying to deal with some of those experiences and that bring up anger or other emotions within us that we kind of cling to, if that makes sense. I'm trying to be able to say everything without giving away the story at all. but yeah, I mean, to me, a lot of it is coming to my character's journey to coming, discovering peace for herself, which involves letting go of some things she's held on to. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning of it's her journey. At the beginning of the story, she's in a different place than at the end. Hopefully that resonates.
But everybody is. I mean, that's true. That's the part of the beauty of it. And Hunter,
yes,
for you. See, now look, give me all that teeth, man. Come on. your character actually is. It's really interesting because your character is kind of, you know, when you first encounter the two of you, you and Rachel, and I keep thinking. You know, it was one of those things that, I don't know, I've heard children have, people have that kind of childhood. never knew it myself. but they do have that kind of, you know, people do have that kind of childhood where you're running around and you're conquering worlds and you're doing all this stuff in your backyard and it's all this. And there's just sort of, for you, there's actually, it's kind of, you take off from there, but it takes, I don't want to say anything either, but you take off from there and you take off in a direction that no one would really expect as well, you know, which is kind of,
yeah.
Why don't we talk about this a little bit? Because what you thought of that?
Well, Beckett is he's a handful and I haven't experienced it. A lot of experiences that Beckett went through, I haven't experienced that in my life, but I relate to it so much because I haven't gone through as an extreme of, you know, bad choices or just, you know, sliding down this like slippery path. But I really like connect to, and whether it's through people that have affected me like extremely negatively in my life, even in the recent past, this golden child, this golden boy, just charismatic and, you know, a little bit of affluenza action going on just the family. Beckett is just so lovable and he's just so, there's such a good heart there and it just shines, I feel like. And he's always bringing joy into the situation until he's doing quite the opposite with, you know, just, I don't know what language you can use on the radio, but
very clean language.
Okay. So he just really starts messing everything up and he just draws people back in so quickly, with, you know, his charisma and his just the spirit he has, it just like kind of lights the room up. So he's constantly enabled, you know, by his very, very loving family. And it's kind of like that, I see that battle between, you know, unconditional love and enabling, and mm-hmm. there's such a strong difference there, but it can look so similar. And you know, I'm not a parent yet, but I hope to be one day. And I can't imagine having to try to discern, sticking your foot down and bringing tough love when it's needed, but not letting push the child away and not pushing. And so that's kind of what Beckett has to experience is. Pretty much becomes too late when he finally learns his lesson. It's far, far too late. Yeah.
You know, I'll give you a hint on something. I actually did have that experience of having a child. And I found that, you know, in my case, he often was the one exercising tough love. All right, I'm telling you, I don't like to do this to you, but you're going to have to go in your room and
boundaries,
stay there.
Boundaries, Dad.
Exactly. Wendy, this, you know, I'm going to tell you what I felt. Okay. Because when I saw it, I was like I told you, I was really mesmerized by it. I really liked it. I really liked it a lot. But part of it, and I kept thinking, now why did Wendy keep telling me, oh, you're not going to like this play? You know, it's like it's not about politics. It's not bombs and terrorists and all this stuff. And I thought actually there was something in it that actually that was there. And it's not just what I was saying. There's that link. There was something that feeling or that sensibility that ran through many of your characters. But in this one in particular, one of the things that I got was, you know, I kept thinking, okay, the parents in some ways they were you know, very wealthy. They were very well off in society. But also at the same time, they were in this section of society that was actually, you know, look, you run a Hollywood studio. You're not necessarily an ass the entire time you're doing it. you know, and a lot of people actually are very progressive and they're thinking about things and all this stuff. But I kept thinking about, okay, if this was the 60s, what would these two young people be doing? What would they be thinking? And instead of the 60s, they were in a different era where life pretty much for a lot of young people at that time, and for many people, just it went from the realm of, you know, when I was a kid, right, it was like we could do anything, and we were doing everything. We were going to take over the world. We were going to change the entire world. You know, we weren't afraid of standing up or pursuing things that everybody told us were just foolish and we shouldn't be doing. And, you know, and but when these two characters are in the world, they're in a very different world than that, a world that has very little horizons. You know, or horizons that would be exciting. You know, their horizons are very limited in a certain sense. And I was kind of, you know, because I was trying to figure out, like, all right, why does Hunter do what the hell he does? And it's and actually some of the things that he does would have been acceptable a decade earlier. You know.
Well, it was the 80s.
All right, two decades earlier then.
Yeah, it was the 80s, and the 80s were a time when I think, you know, there was a lot of wealth and, you know, I mean, I know that there was things going on.
There was Reagan.
But, you know, I mean, living in L.A., I mean, it was a very Reagan-esque sort of society then. I mean, I became a young mother in the 80s. I think that it was, as far as the parents go, it's a generation. It was probably the first generation that was so overinvested in their children. And, you know, a lot of mothers, you know, quit their jobs and this became their job. So it was their validation. I mean, at least, you know, I drew from whence I came, you know, in this whole arena and everything. And I think that was one of the, you know, in the very early workshops, I was worried that people would say, why should I care about the problems of these rich people? You know, as the play evolved, I think it's become much more universal. But I think it's a generation of parents that, I mean, that's where, like, the term helicopter parents started to come into. I think that it's the first generation that took personally what was going on with their children. You know, I remember saying to my kids, do you know when I applied to college, my mother was like, who cares? Here's $5 for the application. You should be happy I'm sending you to a college counselor and getting it. You know, and where did we get in? That, you know, that's like another thing. Like this whole generation of parents who were like, we're applying to, we're going here for the summer, we're doing this. You know, the separation between themselves and those children. And I think that a lot of those children who came of age in the 80s, my kids came of age a decade later, but came of age in the 80s, had a very hard time separating from their parents, you know? I mean, you read all these articles about people who, like, moved to the town where their kids were going to college, you know, so they could become involved. And, you know, their kids would, like, when they were in college, send them their papers to proofread before they turned them in college. I mean, come on. You know, so I think that whole milieu of overinvested parents kind of, you know, and I think it's gotten worse now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's gotten much worse. But, you know, they're desperate to do, you know, when they had a failing child or an errant child, they are desperate to save that child. And I think that's why so many, you know, am I going on too long?
No.
All right. Actually, one of the inspirations for this was my kids are adults now, and they grew up and went to school with a lot of these kids whose parents were, you know, able to buy them into schools and things like that. And you know, now the proof is kind of in the pudding. Most of them are doing great. You know, they're great adults out there. But there's a few of them that are kind of lost. And by by always saving them, they never taught them how to fail and learn resilience. And, you know, I think that's kind of what, you know, one of Beckett's things is he never learned how to fail. And he never learned that you have to get back on the horse again and try it again. You know?
Now, see, one thing I have to tell you is, again, when you gave him the name Beckett, I didn't care what the play was about at that point. I was going to go see it, all right? And then I thought, wait, she's not spelling it with two T's. What the hell's going on here? Anyway, see, I know what you're saying, but I also think that there's this, and I think it's really valuable in terms of people, you know, how you're situating it. But there's also for both of you, you know, for your character, you know, Emily, who really does everything right, you know, and actually doesn't do everything right because, you know, a lot of ways it's she has to develop the courage to actually say, I'm going to do different things. And for Beckett, you know, it's I thought, you know, I really do. I still think, though, that there was – because part of that 80s brought around was a tremendous emptiness. There was just a hole where there used to be heart in a lot of – that people had. We had something very different. And then you look at the future that's out there. It was just a hole. You know, and I mean, I'll just, without giving anything away, there was, you know, the idea, I was talking with, you know, the guy that went with me to see the play, and it was, and we were laughing about the fact, okay, he got in trouble for, you know, for smoking weed? Wait a minute. What was, you know, but it was like, but it wasn't just trouble. It was like this mammoth kind of, oh, this is, you know, and you go through all this hell. And, but it was just, I kept thinking of people having to confront that sort of vacuum, but it was a vacuum. It wasn't really a vacuum either, because it was filled with the you know, the Reagan-esque years, you know, the idea that we remember those years. You guys aren't old enough to remember this. You wouldn't know it. Back in then, gold was discovered in California, but really the thing of, you know, at that time, remember, nuclear war was a real thing, and you had Reagan actually get on the radio and when he was giving his monthly fireside chat things or his weekly ones, whatever, and he got on there and he said, we begin bombing in 5 minutes, and it scared the hell out of everybody. But it, and you know, and then he laughed about it. Oh, big joke, nuclear war is a big joke, you know. But this was the future that people were facing. So I couldn't help but think, and I don't know, I'm not going to put it in your head, but in my head, watching it, I kept that was the sort of the embrace of it. I just kept thinking, well, yeah, these kids are looking at a world that is tremendously different, and the parents would have come from the previous generation who had that possibility of actually changing the world and doing something worthwhile.
And that passion, you know, I remember saying, God, you know, nobody gets behind any causes in the 80s. I mean, in the 80s is when everybody decided to, like, go to business school, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And boy, is
Milken
that...
Milken and,
I'll just say, and then I get all the business people coming after me, but... There is a lot of soullessness in business. I mean, no, you know, because it's like, you know, in business, it's like, especially business based on profit, and profit's the motive, and we don't care who we run over, what countries we wipe out, who we, you know, steal things from. It's just get it. And when you're facing that kind of future, frankly, I think Beckett had a very reasonable response, and I think your character was dealing with that as well in terms of trying to figure out how do you get up out of it, because you didn't like the response that your brother had, but on the other hand. What were you going to respond to? You know?
But I think, just personally, the thing that I think I enjoy most about the play and is the fact that it is showing clearly everyone's humanity. And I think we get stuck in this idea of this is good behavior, this is bad behavior, this is right, this is wrong. And the fact of the matter is, we're all human, and all of these characters have some part to play in everything that happens. And I think that's one thing that Emily realizes throughout the course of the play, because to kind of go ahead and remove some of that judgment that we put on things as people, I mean, that's human nature to judge our actions. But by removing that and being able to look at it all with love and acceptance and see our own humanity, there's something beautiful in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
you're gonna have. You know, I'm just looking at this. We've been having a very nice conversation, but we've gone on really since it's Fungi. I'd love to spend much more time, but since it's Fungi, we're gonna have to. Look at you, my friend.
All right.
Hunter, it's on you. What do you have to add to this before we set fire to the studios and run out?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking about, kind of when we're in the middle of this play and everything, you kind of get stuck in the middle of your character, and you don't really have, you know, a lot of – Beckett, the funny thing with Beckett is he's kind of a wrecking ball. You know, he doesn't think much, and he's just – living life by the seat of his pants by the moment. And like I said before, with the family allowing him to continue on without any real consequences, he never really learns from his mistakes, and he's a little invincible until, you know, it's too late. And at the end of the play, once everything's too late, he's finally reflective. You know, he's finally seeing, like, in a way, is really heavy, and I think that came across throughout, you know, through all the characters, and you know, I think hopefully to the audience as well. And what they take away is the weight of his consequences, finally sitting with them. And you know, it's quite tragic, and it's something that, you know, no one in the world should have to experience. And that's, you know, that's a tough question with, I think, parenting and family. And you know, how do you create the best life for your family and your children, and what can you do? And you can only do so much, and you have to let them you know, make their decisions and learn and fall, and like Wendy said. And you know, I'm really grateful to get to do this play. It's a heavy character, even though the character himself is so whimsical and, you know, and light-footed until the end, but it sure is fun.
Aren't these two great? I mean, God, they're so great. I'm sitting here going, wow, they're so great.
All right, I'm going to give you, real quick, any final comments?
Just that, you know, I love the thought that what you came away with, because it makes me feel that it was successful, because as you know, I never give answers. Mm-hmm. I only ask questions, and that's the part that excites me, and that's the part that makes me feel like it's successful if everybody, you know, everybody sees things through a different lens, but if everybody looks through their lens and sees something in it and sees humanity and asks some questions about their parenting or the way that they were parented, and, you know, goes across the street and has a glass of wine and argues it out, then I feel I've been successful.
All right, you've been successful. And I'll keep seeing your plays, okay?
There you go. All right.
And just so people know, all right, the play is Please Don't Ask About Beckett. And it's playing, what's it playing, on Saturdays and Sundays? It's playing,
well, this week it's playing Saturday evening, Sunday matinee, and Monday evening. And then the following week it goes back to Friday and Saturday evenings and Sunday matinee.
Okay, and it's playing at the Sacred Fools Theater Black Box, which is located at 6322 Santa Monica Boulevard. And it's that little street that's like, it's the entrance, you know, it's Santa Monica, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard. It's not a little street, come on. Anyway, it's a really great play, and I'd really recommend that people go see it. And once
Plays
again, Wendy?
Plays 411.
Pardon me?
Plays 411. You can get tickets.
Oh, okay.
All kinds
All
of
right.
discount
okay,
codes.
Great, great. And we're going to be giving away some tickets, three pairs of tickets when we get to the fun drive. So, Wendy, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael. As always, it's a pleasure.
Thank both of you guys for joining us today.
Thank
All
you.
Right. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back. So, Teddy, let's play track 2.